Tom Dresser has written many books about different aspects of Martha's Vineyard history, from the music of the island to events taking place there in the midst of World War II, mysteries and shipwrecks. But the island has thousands of years of history, and Tom Dresser isn't done exploring it. His latest book is titled Hidden History of Martha's Vineyard. Tom Dresser, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So some might ask, is there vineyard history left that Tom Dresser hasn't touched on? So where did this idea come from?
Oh, my goodness. There's so much history that I just can't begin to tell you how much. The idea came from this for this project because I wanted to get into a little more depth and go sort of behind the scenes on some of the topics that I've written on before, and just to explore different aspects of how historical events took place. And so it really was looking at behind the scenes on it. And I started off wanting to do more on the Underground Railroad, and then I found that there were other topics that I could get going on that would be more interesting in spreading out the topics across a wider range. So I covered 5 different subjects in this book.
And you start the book with the history of place names, everything from towns to streets. Was this a topic, you touched on this in some of your other books, right? In brief, yeah.
Years ago, I used to drive tour buses, and I would have fun telling people about different towns and how each town would have 2 names just to confuse tourists, mm-hmm. and how, you know, it's not Gay Head anymore, it's Aquinna, and where West Tisbury came from and so forth. And then I realized there was more to it than that. The street names are fascinating. People had the right to name their own streets if they were developers or if they were the only people living on the street. So we have places like Line Drive and Driveway, which are a little bit off the beaten track.
Yeah. Names of places on the vineyard, as you mentioned, have undergone many changes. Some started with a Wampanoag name, which was then anglicized with the Europeans when they arrived, and some European names were later changed back to Wampanoag names. So what are some examples of how names of towns and places on the vineyard have changed over the centuries? You mentioned Gay Head and Aquinna.
Well, the other one is Oak Bluffs, which used to be Cottage City because of all the little cottages in the campground. And it became Oak Bluffs in 1907. And I just found it interesting that there were 3 towns in Massachusetts in the 20th century that changed their names. 2 of them on Martha's Vineyard, Oak Bluffs, and Gay Head became Aquinna. And just for the record, the 3rd town was Manchester. Manchester, Massachusetts changed its name to Manchester by the Sea in 1989. So that's sort of cool.
The history around the name of Edgartown was interesting and sad, too. Tell us who Edgar was.
Edgar was the son of King James. And the people of New York actually owned Martha's Vineyard. And they wanted to sort of curry favor with the king. And the idea was that they would name the town, instead of, it was called Great Harbor, they wanted to name it in honor of the king, but they didn't want to name it Jamestown, because there already was a Jamestown, Virginia. So they went with James's son, whose name was Edgar. And little Edgar was 2 years old, and the assumption was he was going to grow up to be king after James passed away. But unfortunately, little Edgar died when he was only 4 years old, and so we became Edgartown, but we're the only Edgartown that we know of, I think, and it's just because of that sort of quirk on naming it.
And this is kind of where you get to the hidden history. I bet there are a lot of people, even living on Martha's Vineyard, who don't know that story. I had never heard that story before.
Yeah. Well, it's very well recorded. I mean, I've gone back in history books that are over 100 years old, and I've got the story from there. And it does, you know, there's a whole semblance of history that's behind the scenes that we don't really know about. And that's where the name Hidden History came from. We know it's called Edgartown, but where did the name come from?
Yeah. You mentioned the streets. Many vineyard roads and streets have interesting names. And for the most part, there is meaning behind the names. A few examples are Tea Lane, mm-hmm. Music Street, and Middle Road. So tell us what you found out about these.
Well, Music Street is a very a prosaic sounding name, but originally it was very much farmland there, and the farmers used to go out this roadway out of town, pulling with the wagons loaded with manure, and they would dump the manure way down the street, and that would be the end of the manure. But the street got this name of Cow Turd Lane. And that was not the nicest name that you could have. And so the idea was that once, or what happened was that a number of whaling captains had houses along there, and they bought pianos for their daughters. This happened in several instances, according to legend. And so the farmers were going down the street one day, and they said, well, let's change the name of this street to Music Street, because that's much more pleasant than Cow Turd Lane. And I checked this with the town clerk in West Tisbury, and she said, yes, that's as far as she knew, that's the way the story came about.
What about T Lane?
T Lane is, well, this one we used to do when I was doing the tour buses on Martha's Vineyard. And you're driving down North Road, and there's a big sign that says that this is T Lane. And the lane, the name came about because prior to the Revolutionary War, Parliament applied a tax on tea. And you may have heard of the Boston Tea Party, where the Patriots didn't want to pay the tax on tea. So they dressed up as Native Americans and they threw the tea in the harbor. But that wasn't very smart because they lost the chance at the tea. They didn't pay the tax, but they lost the tea. Well, here on the vineyard, we like to think that we're a little smarter than that. And we had a captain in the late 1760s, who Captain Leonard, and he sailed over to England. He bought a whole boatload of tea, and he sailed back to the vineyard, and he unloaded the tea. He basically smuggled it ashore. The tax collectors didn't know about it. He hid it in his aunt's basement, which is on this little dirt road in Chilmark. And the name T Lane came out because he had all this tea harbored in his aunt's basement. Gave it to his friends and relatives and didn't pay the tax on tea.
That's funny. I noticed just when I was over on the vineyard, there's a street called Yellow Brick Road. Did you know that?
Yes.
I came across that. I was like, how did that happen?
Right. Well, what I was saying was that a number of people have the opportunity to name their own street, and somehow that came into being. And I don't think it has a street sign, so I think it's just their address is Yellow Brick Road.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to be living on Yellow Brick Road,
right,
wouldn't it?
The other one that's along in the same general area is called The Beaten Path, and it's just off the beaten path. That's where I live. So.
That's so funny. There are street names that don't have quite the same significance. What's the story behind the street named Go Away?
Go Away is just, it's too funny. There was a developer who had some land in Vineyard Haven, and he wanted to build houses there, and he built the houses and had this street going up with a number of houses on it. And then he had the opportunity to name the street, and he went to the town selectman's meeting, and they asked him what street you wanted, what the name of the street was he wanted to make it. And he said, Go Away. And the guy said to him, you can't, you know, I'm asking you a simple question. Just tell me the name. And he said, I want it to be called Go Away. And it's just a perfect name. The guy is quite a character. He's simply since then, he's moved off island, and I get in touch with him every so often. But he says it was just a great moment to be there and to give that name.
And spelled G-O-A-H, Goa. Way,
right.
One of the more historic roads on the vineyard is no longer open for vehicle traffic, Dr. Fisher's Road. Was the road named for Dr. Daniel Fisher, who was once the wealthiest man on the vineyard and whose mansion still stands in Edgartown?
It definitely was named for the doctor because he had the road built. And I've just been doing more research on him. He was really quite an investor in the local economy because he was a physician, first of all. He was asked to come to the vineyard to be a physician for all the sailors that were going in and out of Martha's Vineyard. And so he became a doctor. He married a very wealthy woman, so he got some money that way. And then he started investing in the whaling business, and he had a spermaceti candle factory and getting the oil from the whaling boats. He wanted to have a bakery so he could sell hardtack to the whaling captains as they were going off on their ships. But there wasn't enough wheat in Edgartown, so he went over to West Tisbury, or the area that became West Tisbury, and bought some farmland there. But then he had to bring the wheat from West Tisbury over to Edgartown, so he built this road, basically had it carved directly across from Edgartown over to West Tisbury. And you can walk the route today, but it's pretty much, it's overgrown. Mm-hmm. Vehicles aren't able to get through it. But every so often, the land bank will take a walk through there, and so you can walk along sections of the road. Mm. It's kind of an interesting thing, but it's called Dr. Fisher's Road.
There are two iconic beaches in Oak Bluffs, Pay Beach and Inkwell. Tell us how these two spots got their name and why they've endured.
Okay, the names are dating back over 100 years, at least for the Pay Beach. That's right along Ocean Park, and that's probably the most dramatic coastline in Oak Bluffs. And 100 years ago or more, there were bathhouses along the shoreline there, and there was a tall observation tower, and people would pay, and I think it was a nickel a day, and they would go in and be able to use the bathhouse and change in there and so forth. And of course, people were wearing different outfits. We're talking the late 1800s to the mid-1920s or so, and women would wear basically full costumes of bathing attire. And I talked to somebody who used that bathhouse, and he had a wool bathing suit that had long sleeves and long pants, a guy, and he had this full outfit. And he would change in the bathing house and then leave his outfit there, and it would still be wet the next day because it was wool and it wouldn't dry. And I don't know.
Imagine swimming in wool.
Right. So anyway, that became known as Pay Beach because you had to pay to go there. And then we get into a part of history that we don't like to talk about, but it's there and we have to acknowledge it. And that's that African Americans were not allowed, or not encouraged at least, to swim at Pay Beach. So they were encouraged to go further down the shoreline to what became known as the Inkwell. And the Inkwell beach is, it's just beyond Pay Beach. It's in front of Wabin Park on the road to Edgartown. And it's a very nice beach and very popular today. And the name Polar Bears is a group of people, came about as a name of a group of people who swim there in the summer, basically from Memorial Day to Columbus Day, and they swim at the Inkwell. And the name Inkwell came about, and there, I've got several different derivations from it. One is that if you're looking at the water from above, it's sort of swirling around, it's dark, and it looks like an inkwell. Another derivation is that a number of newspaper people came here in the 1940s and 50s, African Americans from New York, from the Amsterdam News, and these newspaper people enjoyed swimming there, and so the ink from the newspaper became the inkwell. And then a third derivation that I didn't put in this book because I just heard about it more recently is that the poet and author Dorothy West used to bring young people down to train them or work with them on writing. She was like a mentor to them. And she would say, meet me down at the inkwell. And the inkwell there became her means of describing how to write or putting words together in her stories and so forth. So you've got three choices there.
All good Take ones, too. Yeah.
Yes.
You're listening to The Point. We're talking with Tom Dresser about his new book, Hidden History of Martha's Vineyard. You wrote a history of African Americans on Martha's Vineyard, but in your latest book, Hidden History, you look specifically at the Underground Railroad. The vineyard became a stop for slaves escaping the South on sailing vessels, but they weren't really safe until they reached New Bedford. Tell us more about the sea routes of the Underground Railroad and some of the stories of fugitive slaves that were helped to safety by vineyarders.
Well, to get to freedom, it was really the slaves who were in the northern part of the South that they wanted to, that everyone wanted to get free, but the easiest access was made by the people who were in the states that were closest to the Union. And the easiest way to get away was either by boat or it would have to be by train or by walking or carriage. I mean, it really was all very difficult means of transportation. So riding on ships was really the best way to do it. And a number of people who were slaves were put on board ships, and they were basically hired out. And so the ship owner would pay the slave owner money for the slaves working on board ship. And I just found that sort of interesting, how that worked out. And then it was easier for an escaped slave to get on board a ship if there were crew members who were slaves, because they were sort of in the common bond that they were trying to get freedom both ways. So a ship going up north could stop at several different places that were opportunities for the Underground Railroad, which would be an escape pattern. One was Nantucket, which had a lot of Quaker people. Another was Cape Cod, which had a number of little settlements where people could escape there. And then Martha's Vineyard was a third one. But the goal for basically all of them was to get to New Bedford, because that was on the mainland, and that was a direct route from there to get on to Canada. And more slaves were trying to get away from the Union altogether and move on to Canada. And it's really interesting to find out how many people were really trying to get away from anything to do with the slavery situation.
There are also examples on the Cape and the Vineyard of homes and inns and other structures with trap doors and egress through foundations. So tell us about some of the things you found.
Yeah, so this is fascinating. The number of places that do have secret access points. There's one place on the vineyard where a woman was pretty sure that the house that she had, she knew it was owned by a sea captain, and he sailed with a fellow, an African-American, who was also a whaling captain, and she's pretty sure that her house was used on the Underground Railroad. She didn't want her house publicized because she didn't want to have people drifting in there and looking at it. But there are a number of places on the Cape that are inns or hotels that have a secret basement or have a back staircase or have a hidden room, and they're pretty sure that historically African Americans were hidden there. We have a place in Edgartown where I'm pretty sure could have been used for African Americans, slaves on the way out.
And this region has had its share of shipwrecks, and you've written entire books about some, like the sinking of the city of Columbus. How did you decide which shipwreck stories to include in this volume?
There's so many shipwrecks that you could go crazy just defining all of them. And woman Dorothy Scoville did a whole book on various different shipwrecks. I wanted to look at things that were kind of different ones that happened for different reasons and how they sort of played out. So I reprised the city of Columbus because that to me was the biggest disaster that could have been prevented. 100 people drowned off of Gay Head in 1884. It was sort of a precipitating factor in how people handled on the Titanic, that they wanted to work with the passengers a little bit more on that, even though that was a disaster of huge proportions. But I looked back at the city of Columbus and tried to see how that came about. And then we had this terrible storm in the Portland's gale of 1898. And that was just, it was not forecast. It was, nobody knew that the storm was coming, and it just devastated the harbor. And there were a lot of wrecks there. 20 ships just washed ashore and lots of people drowned. It was very difficult to handle and interesting in how it played out. And then the three other wrecks that I got into, the Murdy B. Crowley was carrying coal and it was sailing up the coast and it was foggy, and the captain looked out and saw the lighthouse light flashing and he thought it was Block Island, but it turned out to be Edgartown. And so he crashed right into Chappaquiddick, basically. So that was stupid. And I thought that was intriguing to, you know, and nobody was killed in that, and 14 people were rescued, and it was a very brave event. Then the next one was the Port Hunter, and that was a week before they signed the peace treaty of World War I, and there was a supply ship going through Vineyard Sound right off East Chop, and a tugboat was coming the other way named the Covington, and it was like they were playing chicken, and one boat went one way and the other boat went the other way, and they switched what they were doing, or one of them switched, and they crashed into each other, and the Port Hunter went right down. And again, nobody was injured, nobody was hurt, nobody was killed. Everyone got out okay, but the ship was filled with war supplies. And what happened was, once the ship was down, all these people from the vineyard went over there and started taking out, salvaging all the equipment that they wanted. So they got these leather jackets and they got, you know, boots and all sorts of army supplies. That was very, it was a very strange situation there. But it was so unique, I wanted to draw it out a little bit. And just out of curiosity, it's interesting to note that the Port Hunter and the Covington are two restaurants on Main Street in Edgartown, which I think is kind of a little bit of history coming back at us.
Yeah. Buildings and structures can serve as tangible links to our past. What are some of the most historic and iconic structures still on the island today?
Okay. I went through a lot of public ones, public buildings that people know about, but they don't always know the history about. The Harborview Hotel in Edgartown was built specifically to try to encourage tourists to come to Edgartown, because people were coming to Oak Bluffs, but they wanted to bring people to Edgartown, and they got the railroad there, and then they had the hotel. We talked about Dr. Fisher and about his house and how he I got into just the background on that a little bit. In Oak Bluffs, I was fascinated by two things that everybody on the vineyard knows about, but they don't know the history of it, that there's a statue of a Civil War soldier and there's a flying horses. Mm-hmm. And those are two things that people are interested in. Well, there are copies of those in Rhode Island. There's a statue in Rhode Island, just like our statue, and there's a flying horse in Rhode Island, just like our flying horse is. And just to think that we're not as unique as we think we are. Hmm. You know, we have this stuff, but we
are they reproductions, or are they exactly the same
thing?
They're exactly the same thing.
And they made the statues from the same company at the same time. And we got one statue, and the people in Rhode Island got the other. And then the flying horses were built by the same company, but our flying horses are, it's a merry-go-round, a carousel, and our horses are on a post from the bottom, and they go around in a circle, and they don't go up and down. But the flying horse in, I think it's Westerly, Rhode Island, the horses hang on a chain, and they go around. But they were built by the same company, the Deere Company in Long Island. So, yeah.
And it's worth going over to try the flying horses if you never have. There's a lot of trying to catch the brass ring.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right.
Tom Dresser's new book is Hidden History of Martha's Vineyard. Tom, thanks for doing all the research and digging up this info for us. Appreciate you being here.
Well, it's been very nice. This is good.